Best worst case scenario podcast.
I don't know.
What don't you know?
What kind of minor name I would have?
It'd be Old Jiminy Jeans.
Jiminy Crickets, I think, would be my name. Or Frank Peabody, man.
Does he say? No, he says, pickle shoes.
Oh, peaches. Is it peaches?
I think he says, pickle shoes. That's, of course, a reference to SNL.
That's Will Ferrell.
If you know it, you know it.
Will Ferrell's a national treasure.
Yeah.
But he's kind of always himself, isn't he? He's like a big whiny baby man.
I feel like every time we cover an episode, you don't make it through one without at least calling one guy a whiny little bitch boy.
No. It's been a while.
And today, it's Will Ferrell. So.
No, it's been a while since like episode 12 when we did Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, but we're not talking like prospectors for nothing, because...
No, we're not.
First off, welcome, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
This is Mayan here.
This is Dana here.
And
we're flowing and going.
Flowing second
like
off,
the gold.
We did something crazy, guys.
Yeah, we bought some cocaine.
No.
And snorted it just 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but we went somewhere that is a historical and legendary and dark old thing of the past.
Old piece of shit. Run down, dilapidated.
Good job, man. It's where fortunes were made and fortunes were lost. I'm, of course, talking about the town of Monte Cristo. What did you think of it, that hike we did?
It was a pain in my ass and my legs. It was the hardest hike I've ever done, and I haven't done that many hikes.
So, not really saying much?
I don't know. It was really smooth going until we went past the town area and decided to go up a fucking cliff. It became rock climbing. Now, I've never done rock climbing.
You have now.
No, I have not.
And you're almost crippled now. That thing just destroyed my knees.
Yeah.
After I went up that hike and I came back down, I felt like I had the legs of like a 90-year-old who was like...
You're like a noodle waving in the wind.
A painful noodle. It hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt to like even move my knees. Or I mean like bend them. Not move them. Who moves their knees? But like bend them, you know?
Yeah, I felt like Forrest Gump or something. Like I just broke out of my braces and I was walking for the first time.
Stiff-legged.
It hurt.
With a wedgie, a major wedgie.
Yeah. No, the hike, it was good. It was very scenic. I highly recommend it if you're in Washington.
Western Washington.
If you live in Washington or you're visiting here, go check out the Monte Cristo Trail.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth it.
It's about 35 miles east of Everett.
Just don't fucking do the Glacier Basin Trail after that.
Yeah, leave that shit alone. Just don't do it.
2.4 miles of pain.
Take it from us who have 90-year-old knees now.
I'm in a wheelchair now.
Dana is. I had to push him in here just to record.
God.
Yeah. But
you're going to have to wheel me back to the bathroom right now.
Seriously. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do this hike, once you hit the Glacier Basin...
Glacier pain.
You'll know, because you'll hit this waterfall. It's really cool. It's to your left. And in front of that, it's just this sheer rock wall that's like straight up. And
yeah, it's scary. And I'm kind of sketched out by height, so it was a real, I don't know, challenge.
I think I was worried about you. Cause
I pushed through my fears.
Because we were climbing up, and then I remembered you didn't like heights. And I looked down, and I was like, holy shit, we're high up. And you could just fall and break your neck and ass bone. Easily, so
I'd rather break my ass bone than my neck, man.
That's true.
What does
an ass bone do, man?
Nothing.
You just sit on it.
Just reminds you of your primates, man.
So, but you did pretty good. You didn't.
Thank you.
I mean,
you sound like an official tour guide, mountaineer.
I am. And this hike, guys, it's like Dano was saying, it's scenic, but it's also creepy.
It's haunted.
It is, because this hike takes you through an old mining town that had like 1,000 people in it, right?
Yeah. The Monte Cristo ghost town was once a booming mining town with over 1,000 inhabitants at its peak. The site dates back to 1889 when silver was discovered in the area, and within 2 years, wagon roads carved their way into the rugged terrain. Hopes ran high at Monte Cristo in the early 1890s, as it was believed that the area would become the greatest lead-silver district in the Western Hemisphere. Spoiler alert, it wasn't.
Which is why no one's there today.
No.
Nothing.
Nobody's there. It's a ghost town. Ghosts are there. Ghosts live there.
That's true. Yeah, so just to add on to what you said.
Yeah.
The location is just northwest of Monte Cristo Peak. It's located in eastern Snohomish County in western Washington. And like I said, it's directly east of the city of Everett, about 35 miles. It sits in a valley between Silvertip Peak and Cadet Peak. There are no existing roads that lead to the town, so you have to take a trail from the Mountain Loop Highway, sorry, which is roughly 8 miles round trip. The town was originally in active use for not just the lead, like you said. Man, I went like all of 10 minutes without rhyming, man.
No, you're full of rhymes and shit.
Man. What else did you say besides lead, though?
Silver.
Silver, okay.
And a little bit of gold.
A little bit of gold, there you go.
That's the saddest part.
Yeah. So,
So it's right off of Mountain Loop Highway, and you got to go to Barlow Pass, right? You got to go to the Barlow Pass trailhead or something to get to it.
That's the one. That's one we went to.
Because if you try to route yourself through Google Maps, it just doesn't compute well. It's like it wants you to walk the whole distance.
I know. From where you're What's at. Up with that?
It's like Hobbit style Google Maps.
So just to, before we dive into this fascinating historical town, just to give you guys some...
Before we chisel into this.
Sure. Whatever you want to do to this town. Before we do it, though, the period... which it was kind of founded in when this gold mine was discovered, and silver and lead and copper Eagle. And other stuff, I think.
And arsenic.
lots of arsenic. But that period of 1890 roughly to 1907 when it was in active use, just to give you like an idea of what was happening in the United States.
I want an idea.
We have industrialization and urbanization. So the United States pretty much it just means that the United States was in a period of rapid industrialization, and industries like steel, oil, and manufacturing were like having a major boom. So this was the perfect time for this to happen. And a lot of people were moving to cities at the time. So the progressive era reforms also happened during that time. And that was when social and economic problems caused by the industrializations. The industrializations, man. I'm making up words here, but it was pretty much addressing issues like corruption in government, child labor, and
poor
working conditions, and practices in business that weren't great for the country. So you had that going on. You had labor movements and strikes. You had expansionism and imperialism. You had the United States expanding its influence in international lands, acquiring territories such as Hawaii, Guam, Puerto Rico.
Jesus Christ, man.
And then at that time, you had social movements. So that culminated...
this is like History 101, guys. Hope you're taking notes. We're going to quiz you at the end of this.
Yeah, so it wasn't until like 1920 that they passed the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote. But it was picking up steam at this point, right?
Well, I like that.
And
like a train.
Also, during this time, you had economic panics of 1893 and 1907, which was when the stock market kind of just took a nosedive.
Took a big old shit.
And
scared a bunch of people.
And as you'll find out later, these things had huge impacts on the town of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
That's just to give you guys an idea, because
it's crazy.
For me, like, when I see the year 1890, I'm like, what was going on back then, you know? Like,
yeah. Who was playing in concerts?
Were they wearing wigs? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, how old did they look? You know? What did they wear? I think they kind of wore, and I mean, not the miners, or miners like ERS. I think they wore like shitty looking clothes because they were in the mines, obviously. But normal people in like a city, like if you look at old pictures, everyone's dressed to the nines in suits.
Really?
Yeah, and top hats. Like, just everyone looked fucking good.
Spiffy.
Every person was a businessman, even the women. Yeah, so it was different times then. Nobody wanted to be in the mines. So the people that were mining were rugged, hard fucking dudes.
Yeah. Like, and you went up there, like...
And I felt rugged just driving out there in your car. Like, this is a rough trip, man. Like, it's taken an hour and a half to get there. And then we got to walk.
How long did it take them back in the day to make that drive, which they did by a train, right?
Mostly. If you're coming from Everett, the train would take 12 to 24 hours.
Jesus.
To go 42 miles.
Man, we're truly blessed.
We are. Yeah, because we can talk shit about the past.
That's
man.
Crazy.
It is.
So it started in the early summer of 1889.
Yeah.
Joseph Pearsall, though, he discovered many glittering deposits and followed them north to a place called 76 Gulch.
So this guy's just like Gollum. He follows shiny things.
His preciouses. And that was the place to become Monte Cristo.
Yeah. I hear he was a rugged individual. He was like the first one to get claims in Silver Creek in that area. And he climbed and checked out the whole area, like to the super high points where there were no trails yet.
Damn. But he had calves the size of your head, man.
Yeah. And like you said, he saw that glittery shit and he was like, oh.
That's a direct quote,
he, like,
actually.
Jizzed his pants right there. Joseph Pearsall. He jizzed his pants right there on the peak.
I would too, man, if I saw that much gold glittering before me. So after this discovery in 1889.
July 4th, he staked it. What a fucking patriot.
We're coming up on that.
Ain't it?
It's like he planned it.
Yeah.
It wasn't long after he discovered that before word spread and claim staking followed.
Gossipy bitches, them miners.
Well, yeah, gold's up in them hills.
They're all about the booming towns.
Everyone wanted a piece of that.
Yeah, they wanted in them tunnels.
So by 1890, many miners were hiking to Monte Cristo from the south by way of Index, Galena, and Mineral City.
Wow.
That was another booming gold. It was a booming prospector place. I don't know much about it.
It was a prospective place for prospectors.
It's prospective.
They picked it well.
I think I'm using that wrong. But even from the north, they made the Pioneer Trail, which connected Sauk City. Come on, man. I knew you were going to laugh if he pronounced this shit. So it connected Sauk City on the Skagit River to the town as well. The interest grew and the gold flowed, and investors from all over the United States helped fund further work in the area, including a wagon road, which was built over Barlow Pass, which is the current trailhead now.
Right, right.
And it was later replaced by a railroad.
Yeah, Mr. Barlow, right?
Who's that?
I think he was the engineer for the fucking railroad.
Do you know the railroad, man?
No, I just know
that. Is that him?
I just know the railroad went to hell, man. Straight to hell, and that hell is Monte Cristo.
Mr. Barlow made the railroad?
Yeah, that's why it's called Barlow Pass.
Damn, I didn't even know that.
I don't know his full name, unfortunately, but cool guy.
he laid down some tracks. That's what we'll say.
He laid it down. But I think even though like the whole place had this potential, it still needed a ton of financial fucking backing. Like, you couldn't just go there and mine. You needed all this equipment and the railroad. Like we were talking about with
right.
Mr. Barlow. Like, I think it was, what, financial backing by some big players like John Rockefeller. John D. Rockefeller. Yeah.
He invested.
Yeah. His company's acquired 2/3 of the best properties in Monte Cristo because he wanted that fucking bank.
Mystery Mine was one of them. Because there were, if I remember correctly, there was 13 mines and 141 claims. I think I'm pulling those numbers straight from my ass right now, but it was something in that ballpark in this universe of numbers that was. So the gold, though, it was transported via train to Everett. Everett was where the smelter was at.
And he who smelt it, dealt it. Oh, my gosh. The smelter man.
Really, man?
No. Yeah, the railroad. It was built in 1893, which was just, 2 years after they sort of put their claims down and started making the town and shit. provided a way to transport people along with heavy equipment and supplies to the mining town. And once the operations began, the rail line was used to carry ore from the silver and gold mines to the smelter in Everett.
Where they processed everything or what?
Yeah,
what does a smelter do, man?
He smells farts. He processes like the taste and the smell and the consistency of what the fart came from.
That didn't come up in my research, but I will take your word for it, man.
It's pretty much a fart processor. It's a rough job, man. They work 24 hours a day.
That's why those labor laws came in. They're like, these guys smelling farts all day, man.
Yeah.
It ain't right. Mm-mm. So what's the timeline of that train? Do you know?
Well, they built the railroad in 1893, which reached Monte Cristo. And before that, though, like, what was it? Purcell. When he found that silver glittering all over the hillside.
Glittering. All right, man. I'm gonna need you to take it down like two notches now. We got a podcast to record here.
I know. What was I saying?
I think you were saying when it was built.
Yeah, 1893. It reached Monte Cristo from Everett. And obviously it was a really long train ride. And in 1900, USGS geologist J.E. Spur wrote the following about his experience traveling to Monte Cristo.
The mining camp of Monte Cristo is situated in the heart of the Cascade Range, but on its western slope, it lies nearly due east of the city of Everett, and about 40 miles distant. It can be comfortably reached only by the Everett and Monte Cristo Railway, which starts at Everett and terminates at Monte Cristo.
Spoken by a true prospector.
I'm not done yet. You shut up. Somewhat strangely, there is not even a good wagon road by which the camp may be attained.
That is strange.
Aside from the railroad, only trails connected with other parts of the country. The journey by rail from Everett to Monte Cristo is a tedious one, requiring from 12 to 24 hours.
But my honest question, though, is when are you going to teach me to use the Force, Dana? That's what I want to know.
What are you talking about?
Because I just heard Yoda.
No, you didn't.
That whole time I heard a little green man
speaking
wisdom to me.
This guy was saying that it took forever to get to Monte Cristo, 40 miles away. But it took 12 to 24 hours because of the terrain.
Gotcha. And that was through the Everett train, right?
From Everett to Monte Cristo, 40 miles. Can you imagine? It takes a whole fucking day to get there.
I mean, trains, man. Have you ever taken the train to like Portland or Oregon?
No, I got a car.
I mean, I know they're in the same place. I know that. But like, it takes a while.
I got a car.
And those are modern day trains. So like an old train.
Traversing the terrible terrain, yeah. It's crazy.
So how long did this boom last where gold flowed like honey in the lands and people made fortunes?
I'd say like the boom kind of lasted from 1893 to 1897. And then from that point on, it kind of dwindled down.
It went downhill.
Yeah, like the ore did.
Yeah.
On those aerial tramways.
Because what I heard is that pretty much, pretty much what happened was they found these glittering, what do you call them? Deposits. They found these glittering deposits and everyone was excited. And for a while, they did find a lot of silver and gold. But eventually, what they found is that after about 500 feet of mining down, there wasn't much there. So you had all these people investing. You had like 1,000 people at its peak living there. And then to find out that actually there isn't much gold here and silver. And there's a whole lot of lead and arsenic, but you know, that must have been devastating. So from that point, which I think was 1897, was when they realized that actually this ain't all it's cracked up to be, man.
This ain't all it's cracked out to be. Like you were saying, they couldn't find anything substantial, like as they went deeper into the mines, which was a huge buzzkill. Like that let so many people down because you're supposed to get more as you go deeper. And they didn't.
So what I want to say is that before it did reach the busting point. Okay, that's the wrong word to use.
A busty.
Before it reached that point, you actually had Trump's grandfather, Frederick Trump, invest in a hotel that was maybe something else too.
Yeah. Make America mine again.
He invested in a hotel, and Monte Cristo, for a while that it was a mining town, it also became a retreat, and people would go there to the hotel and actually enjoy themselves up in the mountain.
Maybe yeah, up in the
really enjoy themselves.
Babe hotel.
Yeah, what do you know about that?
I don't know. I just knew that he wanted in on this action. He wanted to make money on it, and he opened up like the Boomtown Hotel. So he got in there like when all the action was going on. And some people say that this hotel was also a brothel.
Which is very
likely.
Likely the case in 1893 or 1894 when he started it.
In that area, the mid 1890s. The mid 1890s. Yeah. It doesn't, but like a bunch of miners hanging out in a brothel doesn't sound right, does it?
Not when you say it literally like that. No miners should be in brothels, man.
Some of them gold diggers up in them hills now. Yeah. If you ain't find no gold, at least you find something else.
Yeah. So one thing that's kind of interesting is that even as all this gold and profits were flowing, the processes of the mining and what they actually dug up produced a lot of waste, and tons of arsenic and lead were found. In fact, if you go to the area, even today, they say, like, don't really touch your hands, or don't really like suck on your fingers. Or like,
it also says don't wipe your ass with your hand.
Nah,
because you could get metal poisoning.
You got me with that,
man. Anally.
Damn it. I totally did that, man.
That's the repository is what you're talking about.
Right.
Which was constructed to contain approximately 14,350 cubic yards of contaminated material removed from various mining and processing sites at Monte Cristo as part of the 2015 cleanup.
Give me some of that material, man. What's in that material, though?
I don't know. Some arsenic, some poisonous shit, you know, it's a kind of byproducts too, I think.
So the repository was a place to store all of this bad stuff without it leaking into like the rivers and streams and
everything. Yeah, but it's kind of like Chernobyl, because even though they cleaned it up, it's still there. So the area is still contaminated. So that's why they say, wash your hands before you eat, if you touched anything. And it's kind of interesting the way it's like a coffin, sort of a giant coffin, the repository, because the contaminated material was compacted with lime and then covered with a geotextile fabric and Whoa. Then covered with several feet of clean soil to isolate it from the environment.
Damn. They went retard. All out. Like, I don't even know what a geotextile fabric is.
It sounds like some rubbery thing, man.
Some rubbery thing.
But like the mining process is pretty intense. We got the miners who are making these long steep hikes up to the mines and then spend, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a day mining.
Long days.
I mean, it's really up to them, I think, how long they can be in there. But obviously, the longer you work, the better you get paid. And if you're all the way in buttfuck nowhere, you want to get paid.
I don't think I want to be there.
There's nothing. There is nothing else to do but mine or go to Trump's hotel.
Which might not be a bad place from what the stories say.
Hands of buttfuck.
Oh my gosh. That was good, man. That was snappy.
Wasn't it?
It was on top of it.
Yeah. So once the miners would get the ore out of the mines with like rail car or little carts and shit, however they did it, backpack it, I think it depended on the mine, they would use these aerial tramways. So they're basically cable buckets, and they were built for hauling ore to the town site, carrying up to...
I got some footage of that.
Did you?
Yeah, I got one of those little buckets.
You got a bucket.
There could be some ore in there.
Yeah, and you can find one of them buckets in our teaser.
Yeah, go watch the video. We did on our YouTube channel. What's it called?
And our Instagram.
It's called our name, right?
it's the Monte Cristo Ghost Town teaser.
Right.
But you can see in the video, there's a bucket in there.
There is a bucket. It's confirmed. Yeah. There's a bucket.
And it's a big bucket, kind of.
And that might be what they used, what they sent down those tramways.
And do you think you could fit in that bucket?
I think that milkman, whoever sat...
Wait, let me get to that
okay,
part.
Fine.
So these buckets were used for hauling ore to the town site, carrying up to 230 tons a day. So these things, like, they're kind of situated like gondolas if you've seen a ski resort or been to one. They go up, and then they come down, and then they go up, and then they come down.
And then what do?
And then they go up, and then they come down.
And then?
And a great example of its use was for the Comet Mine, which is kind of a funny name because it was like the highest fucking mine. It was, the elevation was 5,700 feet on Wilman's Peak.
That's
which
up
is
in heaven,
a
man.
A fucking mile in the sky. So the miners would place the ore in the buckets and send it down to Minertown.
Wow. Did you just come up with that, man? That's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. So it would descend 2,800 feet to the concentrator. So the iron buckets traveled on specially designed thick wire cables from mine camps to bunkers. And a side story was there was a cook at the time that would actually ride in these buckets and bring fresh milk up to the mining sites. But unfortunately, that didn't last long.
The dedicated milkman right there, man. Like, that dude had the best slogan. Like, you're up in the fucking mountains, I'll bring you milk.
Like, in a basket.
Yeah, in a bucket.
But yeah, it didn't last long because one of the cables whipped up and sheared off his ear.
That Van Gogh'd the man? Van Gogh'd?
It Van Gogh'd him. That's fucking good, man.
Damn.
Or did it Van Dough him?
Dough?
Because he's a cook.
I'll have to ponder that one.
Van Dough. Because he's a chef.
Oh,
he's a
I
cook.
See. I see. I got you.
That's a far reach.
Yeah, it was. Can't win them all.
So the 5-story building completed in 1894.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that thing used gravity.
You're wrong.
To do the stuff it did.
It did use gravity to do the stuff it did. You are completely right.
And what stuff did that do?
It sifted through the shit. It went through the it crushed the ore. It crushed the ore even more.
Man, I think I like gifted you with my rhyme ability. Dana has it now. He's got it.
It crushed the yeah. I
He's feel got like, the music.
I feel
in
like
it.
You should do some Eminem songs.
He's
man.
A poet and he know it, man.
Yeah, it was a gravity-based mill because it was a 5-story building, but it was tiered, so it went up a hill. So it wasn't like straight 5 stories up. It
Think
was
like a terraced hillside with steps, like large steps, yeah. And then the building kind of was built along that.
Yeah, you'd have these horses bring a like a cart full of ore, and it would go from the top floor, the fifth floor, all the way down and get sifted. Then from there, it would make a 42-mile journey by rail car.
On that train we were talking about.
Yeah, from Monte Cristo to Hotfoot, which is the Snohomish Lake Stevens area.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that's like, you just covered the part that happened on the mountain. That doesn't even cover everything that happened once the ore got to
the smelter.
Yeah.
So the concentrator was a complex crushing and separation process used to concentrate and separate the shitty rock and sulfides from the good stuff, the valuable minerals. Then it was burlap bagged and finally shipped out for final processing at the smelting place in Everett.
That's cool.
And what I found was some interesting information about the amount of gold and silver they were actually able to extract from the ore mine.
So not much?
No. It's excruciatingly low.
Oh.
So some examples of the high yielding mines. We got the Pride and Mystery Mine. Production numbers, it showed a whopping 0.20 ounces of gold and 3.0 ounces of silver per ton of ore. So it was slightly better the initial survey, but as they went down, it was like, oh my God.
It's a shitty end of stick, man. So pretty much after everything was said and done and Monte Cristo experienced that boom, we come to the extinction of this town. One of the reasons why the mining shut down to begin with was actually flooding. And what happened was the autumn floods that occurred in the mountains were so bad that it was too costly to repair the machinery and make a profit. So not only, like you were saying, were they getting so few gold nuggets, but they also had to repair constantly every time the seasons changed this expensive equipment that was destroyed.
They essentially got flooded the fuck out on top of everything else they were going through. In November of 1897, the worst flood known to date caused massive damage to the railroad and downstream settlements. With basically no hope for supplies, the Monte Cristo town was abandoned by everybody, and the residents walked down the damaged railway to Granite Falls, which was quite a walk, carrying what they could carry.
Yeah, and those are the residents of Granite Falls, so now you know why it's so messed up.
Asking for shelter, man.
They're all homeless bays from Monte Cristo, man.
They are.
But that's sad. That's sad. You gotta leave your home, your livelihood.
Your livelihood.
That's funny.
Well, that's funny if they were lumberjacks, man.
Sure.
Their livelihood.
Your livelihood. Your work, your career, your family, your church, your school, your minds.
Lay it down.
You got to leave it all behind. And you might have not have made a nickel. That last thing you said, was that after the resort closed down or was this just the mines?
This was in 1897.
Okay, so...
So this really closed it down for a while, and it didn't really open up until 1900.
Because there was really no reason to invest into the mines anymore. It was just a resort town at this point.
Yeah, and you also had the Klondike.
What would you do for a Klondike, Dana?
I would go into a mine for a Klondike and hope
that's exactly what they did.
Had some chocolatey ice cream in there for me.
You know, Dana would mine for a Klondike bar.
That'd be like 400 pounds in the mines.
Yeah.
What would you do for a Klondike bar? Yeah, no, but a lot of the miners left by around 1900 to the Klondike mine.
Yeah, because if you're a prospector, you got to go where the gold is.
And it was booming. It was
the gold isn't in Monte Cristo, you leave.
Yeah, you got to go where it's hustling and a-bustling. But just the whole Monte Cristo thing was fucked. The final like sort of breath of it, of the operation ceased in 1907, which was also, I'd say, likely or partly due to the panic of 1907, where you had the financial collapse.
Where the stock market crashed.
That's like when everyone lost their panties.
50%. Right? Yeah, you lost even your knickers.
The town would continue to survive as a tourist attraction for several decades after 1920. John Andrews, this investor guy, moved from his Illinois home and purchased most of the abandoned real estate and turned the surviving hotel and area into a resort. But Andrews, even though he bought it like in the 1920s, he sold out in 1951 to this couple. And this was like after the Mountain Loop Highway was installed. So you could get there by car, not just by fucking wagon and train that would take 24 hours. They sort of turned it into this like weird Ripley's Believe It or Not site. They really played on the ghost town thing. And they had like a museum and like a little residence building for people to stay. They had like these this attraction, which was called Slippery Sam, which was basically a dummy lying in a board coffin. You could say Monte Cristo was cursed from the beginning. The U.S. economy fell into a recession shortly after operations started. Wages fell. Credit froze. Workers froze too, literally. They went on strike and spent weeks freezing in the snow, waiting for the rail to be completed. The connecting railroad through Robe Canyon kept failing. The weather sucked ass. The routes were narrow and prone to terrible flooding. Avalanches came crashing down, one of which destroyed part of the town, wiping out buildings and streets. Lives were lost during construction of the mines, with collapses, avalanches, and dynamite explosions, taking the lives of many.
It's truly a spectacle to see such different times than the times we live in today. So I recommend,
highly recommend,
any people that are close to this site, this historic site, to go check it out, because
Monte Cristo,
there's something in the woods, man. You walk down and it just feels heavy, like time and death have passed through there.
And you felt sick right after it.
Yeah. Monte Cristo gave me a stomach flu, man. Made me shit my pants. And diarrhea. I blame Monte Cristo. Some ghosts doing their dark, dark wizardry over my bowels. Yeah. So careful, folks.
We can't recommend it enough. Just where it depends.
Yeah. And also, you got to cross a river, so be mindful of that. And
yeah.
If you are hiking the trail with someone who can't jump over stuff, just keep that in mind.
It's a dark, dark place.
So go. Yeah, go. Discover. But first, make sure to like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube.
And rate the show if you're listening on Spotify.
Yeah. And
or Apple Podcasts. Really right. Helps.
Yeah. And if you really enjoy the show, guys, consider checking out our Patreon, where you can become a member and help fuel the podcast magic.
Yes. We've got some content on there, too, for
we
you
do.
Patreon people.
Yeah.
We've got some behind the scenes. We've got a bonus episode, and we'll have more stuff coming.
Yeah. Thank you guys for joining us on this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
From your host, Maya.
From your host, Dana.
We hope you strike gold out there.
We do. Good night now.